Thank you so much for those very kind words of introduction. I'm so glad to see some boys and girls here because, you know, when the Lord Jesus begins to work in our hearts, He can do it with boys and girls. And we often underestimate it. Just last Friday, I get this Sudan Interior Mission magazine, and the man who's now the director, Dr. Larry Fale, he introduces himself. He said, "My mother led me to Christ when I was 6. Immediately, the Lord put a tenderness into my heart for him, for his word, and for his ministry when I was 12. And then I look back, and I want to give glory to God this afternoon as well as I can. You know, I'm a little bit limited now. My tongue doesn't always speak out what I want to say. Your mind sometimes runs ahead and you haven't got the words yet that you want to use, and sometimes it's in the reverse. But God has been good to me, has given me all these years, and I just want to share with you some of my own experiences, which in a rather unusual way began in my heart as a young man. And I want to begin my thought that I want to share with you from the Gospel of John here. The Lord Jesus Christ, toward the end of his ministry, in John 12, he says, he replies to these men who said, "There's some Greeks who want to see you, Lord." And so Jesus said, "The hour has come for the Son of Man to be glorified. I tell you the truth, unless a kernel of wheat falls to the ground and dies, it remains only a single seed. But if it dies, it produces many seeds. The man who loves his life will lose it, while the man who hates his life in this world will keep it for eternal life. Whosoever serves me must follow me, and where I am, my servant also will be. My Father will honor the one who serves me." And I learned that in the King James Version. "If any man serve me, let him follow me, that where I am, there also may my servant be. If any man serve me, him will my Father honor." This was a verse that the Lord gave to me when I was a student at Moody Bible Institute through the ministry of Dr. Gray. I know I've shared this with you some time ago. Dr. Gray was a wonderful influence in my life, and I want to speak again and again that all of you who are parents and who have children and the responsibility of bringing them up in the Lord, if you do it for His sake, it's wonderful what God will do and can do in the lives of children and of young people in His own way. I perhaps, even while I speak here with you now, confuse some of the thoughts that are in my mind now, because strictly speaking, the Lord was wonderful to me, but you know, it did not actually at first begin in my own home. My parents had been business people. My father was born in Germany with my mother, and they came to America when they were a young couple. I think my father came first and my mother followed later on once he had a job. And he was a gifted, I admire him as a German baker and confectioner. I didn't always admire it when I was younger, because in the German way, you know, the father wants his son to step into the work that he's begun and carry it on. But in my case, I had done rather well in school, even I must admit it, and got good grades. And so I wanted to go on much longer in school. In fact, I never was able to finish college, and I hardly dared to stand in front of some of you persons here who have gone all the way the Lord has led you in His life. But for me, it was not that privilege. When I was, probably when we came from Germany to America, the First World War had intervened. You see, I was born way back in 1906. Well, when my parents came back to America, we joined the Lutheran Church, which was in our community, in a small town where my father started a business. He was gifted as a confectioner and as a baker, and he always wanted a job, a place of his own. He made a good apprentice from some of the things he taught me, and I learned something of the business, and he would be proud to tell me, just a little by example, he would say that his boss would say to him, "Now, you must be careful. Everything has to be weighed when you bake your bread," or in those days it was cakes mainly. And he would take his hand and stick it into the barrel and just shake it and say, "That's a pound." And he proved it by putting it on the scale. And so my father was proud of his business, and I'm grateful for the beginnings I had. But you know, I'm perhaps talking too much about early days, but to get into the Lord's work as a missionary, to have that beginning, it's only God who does things. He doesn't do, in fact, he hasn't made two of us in the same way. He works out his purposes in his way, and I want to give glory to God for his goodness and for his wonderful way of leading. Well, my father, he took me out of high school. I shouldn't admit that here, really, should I? But he took me out of high school. He wanted me to come into the business. But the Lord, again, in his own way, allowed my father to be killed in an automobile accident. But he had trained me in good measure to help my mother, who was a very, like many German women, working hard with my father in the business. And so I stepped out of school and had worked with my father for a number of years before this happened. And then I was grateful to God that I had the ability to stay at home and to work in the business of the family. But the Lord was working in his heart, in my heart. There was a godly man, and I thank God for godly men within the church. He had a boys' club, and I had just come. I was, perhaps 13, 14 years of age, and I had a desire to know the scriptures. I don't know how that all began, but it began with the work of God in the heart of my own heart, my heart of my brother. And in this boys' club, in this particular denominational church, it wasn't so eagerly looked upon that a layman, you see, should teach the Bible. And yet, I thank God for Mr. Troutman, a man who later on, you know, became a trustee of Wheaton College. And his three daughters and son were all graduates of Wheaton. How the Lord leads, brings things together. But the Troutman family, when my father died, he became, to me, the father of orphans and widows, as God provided it in my life at that given time. And it was there that I learned to know the Word of God. You know, if you want to serve God, if you want to serve Him as missionaries, wherever He might lead you, we must love His Word. And it comes, that's where it all begins. And this verse was given to me in a devotional meeting when Dr. Gray spoke to the students, as he did every Saturday morning, and he would have a devotional. He said, I'm not in the habit of marking my Bible like so many students did to whom he was speaking. But he said there was one verse in the Word of God, John 12:26, which the Lord used to speak to him, and he underlined that in his Bible. And as I, listening there as a young, eager student, I felt that was the verse for me that the Lord was giving me. And so, as I want to tell you just a little bit of God's ways of working, he says here, "Whoever serves me must follow me." And that was the first step that I had to learn, to follow the Lord. Well, the Lord in his purpose had taken my father away. So for the next 5 years, I look back as I recall those days. It was like my desert training. And it's wonderful how God can teach us. I love books. I could still read German. I had to learn English as a 14-year-old boy. And I began to love books. And this man of God in our church, he had a wonderful way, you know, for a Christmas present, he would give you a missionary book, and which I loved and which I enjoyed. And I recall even I think of your little library here, how I, after a while, I got a taste for missionary stories. I would go around the library and look among the books. And the Lord used these things to influence my life and give me a vision. And then through, I think, the help of the Troutmans, I got a copy of Hudson Taylor's life story. Now I realize, and I've heard people, younger people, a little older people, trying to make fun of, well, Hudson Taylor, you know, everybody's influenced by Hudson Taylor, and seem to belittle that. Well, praise God, the Lord used the life of Hudson Taylor in my life, and how I admired him as a young man, giving his life so sincerely to serve the Lord. And he was thinking of China. China was practically closed at that time. And the Lord used that material and the reading of other missionary biographies through the years, how the Lord used that in my life to inspire me. May I apologize? I have to take medicine, which somehow dries up my mouth. But all of this, over those 5 years, while I was working in the shop, in the business of helping out my mother, wondering, and even some relatives would come along and say, well, now, you were talking about wanting to go to China or interest in the mission field. You can't leave home. Think of your mother here. But the Lord, again, wonderfully and graciously, worked in such a way that my own brother, who was a little younger, stepped into the business and took over to give me the privilege of stepping out and getting some training for that which was upon my heart. And there are numbers of steps. I can't tell you all about it, but this dear man of God, he probably did it out of the love of his heart. He started a Sunday school in a country Sunday school outside of Butler, Pennsylvania. And he said, well, I need some Sunday school teachers. Well, that's where I got my feet wet. And you know, I think of Mrs. Hawthorne and her sister and family. I got the Sunday school time. And what a wonderful influence a magazine, a Christian magazine could be in the life. I discovered it by accident in the YMCA lying on the table. And the Lord used that material in my life to teach me more of himself and of his word. And it just became precious in my life as the Lord used all this in the background to train me, to help me, who was rather a bashful young man. My father never thought that I would ever stand in front of the public. I remember when I became the president of our Luther League, well, he said, if you ever get up, and I'll sit in the front row, which he never did, alas. But I look back at that now. That probably wasn't a real encouragement, but you know, the Lord is over all, and how he directs and how he works. Well, after I became 21, and my mother was in full consent with me that I should now go to Moody, which I was planning over the last few years. And there again, the Lord gave me 3 to 4 wonderful years of training there, which all in future ultimately had something to do with the work that the Lord was leading me into. And by the way, this came to me the other day. It's rather funny. When I was a boy, just about perhaps 5, 6 years old, my teeth used to be always so far separated. And a lady came up to me. She prophesied, oh, you're going to travel a lot in your lifetime because your teeth are built in such a way. And I don't know where she got the idea, but I just haven't forgotten that. Because part of my life just came to be that. You know, when you, and here again, I sometimes hardly dare to speak up this morning. Here we have these gifted professors here teaching us about mission. And I'm just a humble missionary. I have my own ideas, and I know they made it very clear this morning that we mustn't think that everybody knows everything. And so we can have our own viewpoints on certain matters. But in order to do the Lord's work, especially in my day, if the mission field was 1,000 miles away, the only way to get to that place was either to travel or that's the way to go. And so all of these things worked out in my life as finally I came, it was 1929. I had been a great admirer of Hudson Taylor, as I told you, and of the China Inland Mission, which I still hold high in great esteem what the Lord has done in and through them. And China Inland Mission was calling for 200 new laborers, new workers. And if you have read the story of Hudson Taylor, how through the years, way back from 1865 when the mission began, whenever there was an opening up, Hudson Taylor was so keen to have two missionaries in every province of China. And before he died, you know, the Lord wonderfully gave him the privilege to see two missionaries, I think the last two missionaries in the province of Hunan. Well, it's not on that map, but the province of Hunan was opened up and the Lord sent forth laborers. And so whenever there was a great need, and in those days, you see, China was closed and Hong Kong had been taken over by Great Britain and will soon have to give it back, you know, in a few months. In order to call for new missionaries, in order to advance, they needed workers. So in the years, roughly in the years 20, perhaps 25, 26 to 1930, there were troubles within China, the changeover when Chiang Kai-shek came in and Sun Yat-sen, the men who were the early bringing in communistic ideas in those years right after the First World War. Well, by the years in the mid-20s, many of the missionaries had to come down from the interior down to the coastal cities of Shanghai and Hong Kong because of internal difficulties and revolution, really. So in 1929, when Chiang Kai-shek, I think he came into Canton, and the government was a little bit more stable, the China Inland Mission felt this is the time to go forward, and there was a call for 200 new workers. Now, I was at Moody Bible Institute at that time, and oh, what a wonderful inspiration that was. Here was a forward movement, and the Lord wonderfully, I must abbreviate, wonderfully called for 201 young men and women to volunteer from China, for China. They came from Great Britain, North America, all English-speaking European countries, Australia. And it was a thrill to be among those early workers. And we were sent up here to the province. This map doesn't show everything, but near the city north of Hankow, where we had our language school. And we were sent there. There must have been roughly between 70 and 80 young men and 60 or 70 young ladies that came out to China between the years 1929 and 1931. And in those days, you see, it was always thought, go out to the mission field before you get married. Give the Lord the privilege to train your wife to be, give her a couple of years to learn the language before you think of marriage. Those were some of the ideas that were put into my mind in those days. May I sit down if you don't mind? And so most of us went out to the mission field and we were unmarried, which of course nowadays is not the done thing. We're all encouraged, especially with things as you see on the mission field. It's much better to work as a married worker, to have your family with you, if that is possible. But you know, God, the methods may change. The message never does. And we may do things today in one way, and God led us to do it in another way. I know it used to trouble me when I came home from my furloughs, you know, and people who knew everything better would say, well, you know, you just aren't doing this thing quite right. You should have done this. And they always discredit what has been done in the past, because they thought they knew better. Or sometimes they did and sometimes they didn't. Well, God has his ways of working out his purposes. But I'm mentioning this today. I was very much interested. I got interested in Muslim work, Muslim, as we call them in some areas. And the China Inland Mission at that time was going to send forth workers into Tibet and Turkestan and into some of the areas. You see, when you speak of the Chinese people, you speak of the what they call the Hanran, H-A-N. And there are, I think they say nowadays, up to 50 groups of people living in Western China, like we have our Indians, the Navajos and the Hopis and, you know, the various groups. And the mission was going to send workers out into these fields, which meant, of course, studying the language. And that's been always held up before us as young missionaries. Go to the mission field while you're young, then you can study the language. It's so much harder later on. Well, of course, through the years, we've learned new methods of teaching, and I think perhaps there are many people who can speak much better Chinese than I do, and who have been at it much shorter time than I had to do it for 20 years. Well, I have been in there 20 years. But the upshot was this, that when the appointment of missionaries came, we were here in central China, the leaders from Shanghai came up here to appoint missionaries to different parts of the country. There were six of us left over, and we wondered what was coming up. All of the others were beginning to move out. Here the six of us were asked to go into Xinjiang province, which is Central Asia, Eastern Turkestan, as they call it now. This map doesn't really truly show it, because from the coast of Tianjin up to here is nearly 2,000 miles. There were six of us young people appointed to go into Chinese Turkestan. And it was in the days, you know, to travel from Beijing across Inner Mongolia and up into the city of Guchang and Urumqi, where ultimately we were, which was our destination, would take months of travel. A camel caravan would take roughly 2 months. There was a motor road and a railway that came up into the city of Xi'an and up into this Gansu province. But we counted distance by day's journey, you know, a day's journey 25 to 30 miles. It you know, when you travel 3 miles an hour, it takes a long time to go. And so the mission, the China Inland Mission was always looked upon as being a little slow in daring to do certain things and traveling and so on. But the leaders of the mission, and you know, Hudson Taylor's appointee was still alive. And I met Hudson Taylor's doctor, Mrs. Howard Taylor. I knew them in Philadelphia, so this dates it pretty well way back. But what I meant to say is that for the China Inland Mission in those days to prepare a trip which was unusual, to go across the Gobi Desert to buy two motor trucks, this was in 1932. I think there were only a few trucks. In fact, very few cars had ever gone that way. There was a Citroen French expedition, and Sven Hedin had an expedition that traveled across the Gobi, but they had tractor wheels on their cars, which were wonderful if you wanted to go through sandy desert. But anyhow, what I'm emphasizing is to show that the Lord dared the mission to take this, to advance. This was a period, the door was opening for us to go out there. But this little story of the six of us going across the Gobi Desert was written up because one of the six young men who was with us, a doctor, gifted young doctor, who was in his late 20s, I think, when he came out, he was among the very last of the 200 to arrive here in Shanghai. He was a good mechanic. He loved cars. And among the six, there were three fellows who were mechanics. And every one of us had a job to do. You see, no gas station for nearly 2,000 miles. We had to take, some of you have been on the mission field know what it's like a little bit, but had to take all your tires. You know, you had to plan ahead what might go wrong with even with a new motor car, and some things did go wrong. So anyhow, everyone was pushed into a job. And I, coming from a bake shop, you know, you can guess where I was put in. I was the cook and chief bottle washer. But we all had our ministry and our work to do. But just to briefly tell you, it took us 58 days to do less than 2,000 miles. And there was no road, you see. There was a camel track. And sometimes we could follow the camel track, but sometimes it disappeared. And we had to find our own way up and down the hills and mountains. And the greatest difficulty was trying to cross three rivers here at Etzingol. You know, these maps never show everything very perfectly. Etzingol, there were two salt lakes up in there where four rivers crossing the desert would empty themselves, and at certain seasons of the year there was little or no water, but after a rainy season these would be filled. And we knew from a Swedish missionary and his son who traveled that way that you had to watch those rivers. They showed us one picture where the truck tried to get through and had camels to pull him out. He was just showed that little bit of his cab. But anyhow, we knew some of these things ahead of time, but didn't know enough about it until we got on the road. But I'm trying to briefly just tell you this, like to go from here, from Tianjin to Central Asia, even to do the work of the Lord, often takes time. And it just still does today, but in those days, it took us 2 months, 58 days, I think. I'm trying to rewrite some of my story, and I can't get all the dates straight and to try to remember. We came up here, and within about two months, a Muslim rebellion broke out. And here, who was the person that was most needed but our doctors, Dr. Fischbacher? And that word came around pretty soon. There was a Chinese doctor up there, I think that large city, and we were asked to help out. Now, I had a little bit of medical training that they gave in those days when I was a student at Moody. They had a missionary medical course, and it helped me perhaps to be a good nurse to help the doctor. And I was a great friend of Dr. Fischbacher because his younger brother was a fellow student of mine coming from Scotland, and I knew Dr. Fischbacher's younger brother, so we became good friends, and I had to assist him as much as I could. But under the circumstances, and I here again to make a story brief, while we were working there trying to heal and take out bullets, we took out bullets many times in the back, so you can guess what happened. The Chinese often ran from the rebels, the Muslim rebels. We were, I think, locked up in this city for some 6 weeks or so. But the upshot was this, that this dear doctor, he gave his life ministering to these people. We never quite could find out. I wasn't that sure whether it was typhus or typhoid. We think it was typhus because a second missionary lost his life, I think, on a Thursday night, and Dr. Fischbacher on Sunday night. Excuse me if I want to sit down a little bit. Here, the Lord, we had hoped so greatly. This was a wonderful forward movement in the purposes of God. And here he took away two, from our human standpoint, two precious lives. We never fully understand why God allowed that. But I recall when I was still a young missionary, I think it was when I sent my first gift into the China Inland Mission, and I was, you know, as you would as a young person, telling how wonderful the life story of Hudson Taylor meant to me in my young life. And the dear missionary who answered the letter, he said, yes, the Lord takes away his work, but his work goes on. And his work kept going on even up here in the province of Xinjiang, where we were divided up. Two of us went to a city called Manas, a little further over here, and two of us into the city of Gucheng. This is, there's a camel road that goes across Inner Mongolia, and Gucheng is the first city where they often stop, at least in my day. I think things have changed quite a bit over these 50-some years since that happened, and that's where we met up with Muslims, the Chinese, I can't even think of the right name that they had, but they were the Chinese Muslims that came into Central Asia, brought in, they were related somewhat to the Arabs who had come in from Canton Way. But many of the Muslims, of course, had come in the other way. And if you have studied a little bit of Central Asian history, this is part of the old Silk Road, you know, when the Chinese would export their silk from Beijing and take it all the way across Central Asia and across Afghanistan, Iran. And silk was worn over here in Italy, they tell us, that in the days of Marco Polo days, you see. So this was called the Silk Road. But now, hastily to go on, how were we ever to get out from up there when it took us 2 months to travel up into that part of the world? How were we able to get out to where the main portion of our ministry was in China, nearer to the coast? Well, it was in the days when the Japanese War began in the early 30s, and it was also in the days when Russian communism was pressing into this province of Xinjiang, eastern Turkestan, as it's called now, or they still use that name, Xinjiang, the new frontier. You see, the Chinese are very keen to control Central Asia, even though there you find the Turki, the Uyghurs, the Mongols, the Tajiks, oh, the Kyrgyz, and all of those. They want to, and they have in the last few years, introduced thousands of Hanran, as we call the Chinese race. They want to control Central Asia. And even in the last few months, since I'm here at Carroll Stream, I've been reading in the newspapers of the trouble that is occurring here on the Russian border. You see, now Russia is free, and the Uzbeks and the Tajiks and the Kyrgyz, they have greater freedom than the Chinese have. The same group of people on the Chinese side, this is all mountainous area, and there's rebellion up there even now. I read it in the newspapers almost the last few weeks. Things like that are happening. But to come back again, how were we to able to come out of here from that part of the world? And that too is part of my story. And it's funny how even at my age, people are still very romantically minded. They want to know a little bit more about our experience. You see, here all of us, six young men, were unmarried. And the China Inland Missionary smiled bravely, sent some young ladies way up into this area that in case we might ever want to come out, they wouldn't be so far away if we wanted to get married. And I remember dear old Mr. Hunter, the old senior missionary who led us across here. He was trying to get me interested in some of these white Russian girls. There were what we called them, the white Russians and the red Russians. The white Russians were the non-communistic people, and there were still, of course, a lot of communist people that were infiltrating into Xinjiang. Making, again, a long story short, during those years that I was up there, and there were four of us by now, Dr. Fishbaugh had died, and one of our young men, an Australian from Tasmania, he had gone back to find his bride and became married. But here were four of us, and I had, here again, is wonderful how the Lord leads, Before I was sent up here, I had to go to Shanghai. We had all our few worldly belongings were there, books, and I love music, a little five-organ harmonium that the Chinese had made. And we were able to take some of these things with our trucks across the Gobi Desert. But while I was in Shanghai, this young lady that I had become acquainted with at Moody, Catherine Dodd, she was down there. She had dentistry of some kind. And you know, when you're in school, you meet people by large groups. And here, there were just the two of us. Well, anyhow, we became reacquainted, and we decided, I knew that I was going to be far out of the way for some time. We decided that we would correspond. And over the 6 years that I was up there, the Lord worked in His way, and it's wonderful what you can do by way of correspondence. You can open your heart, you can share things in life. I wish I had all the letters that I wrote in those days that lost somewhere in China. And what my wife wrote to me, in the censorship with the Russian censors up here, I would write letter number 12, and she would answer letter number 1, you know. But through all these years, the Lord just wonderfully undertook for us. But when the time came, it wasn't exactly a commission, but we were to serve the Lord there for 7 years before thinking of coming out. We were not told so, but it was understood, you know, there are a lot of things that are understood, you don't discuss, that we should wait. That if we felt that we should marry in earlier life, well then, don't volunteer for this kind of a work. Well anyhow, there were four of us left. How were we to get out from this part of Central Asia to Shanghai, where my bride-to-be was at the time waiting for me? 6 years had passed by. And the Chinese government said, we know missionaries have come up here, the railroad that goes up to the Trans-Siberian Railway goes all the way across Siberia and comes down to Shanghai. Some missionaries have gone there. It took them about a month railway travel. No, the Chinese government said, you can't travel that way. There's Japanese war going on. There's trouble, you know, in Manchuria with the Japanese were very much involved there. They said, you go down here the way some other travelers have gone. Well, from the city of Fuchang, where I point my finger down near the Tashkar, is roughly 1,000 miles. You figure out 3 miles an hour. That was the only way we could go. No air service. They did introduce. We had several German planes flew over there. They thought they were going to open up air service, but that would never happened. And so we had to travel. There were three of us, and it was so hot. And I've just been rereading a book that tells of a traveler. I know some of you may know Owen Latimore, who has traveled in Central Asia. And I've been reading of some of the experiences that they went through. It got so hot in the day, you travel at night. And of course, there are certain areas where it's unsafe. But from the city of Dihua, or they call it Urumqi now, the Mongol name, to the city of Kashgar was roughly 950 miles, and it took us 40 days to travel, mostly by night. But that was only part of the journey. I'd never traveled this other way, and I didn't know too much about it. I think there are books that tell about it. But if you want to go from the city of Kashgar down into India, it was roughly 500 miles or so. We had to go by horseback, and I have some pictures to show some of the experiences that we had to go through, maybe 450 to 500 miles, I don't know. As you know, mountain roads, they go in all angles, and so you never can estimate it. Took us 47 days. I was 47 days. You know, I had to learn how to ride a horse while I was up there. And that was the way to get around. And they used Russian carts, the Russian four-wheel carts, which the Chinese didn't use. The Chinese used the big carts, the wheels, almost 5 feet in height. These two-wheel carts. Took us 47 days to get down here to Srinagar, the beautiful Kashmir. Oh, and I think back now, a little older, the Lord gave us some wonderful journeys, but the only way you could get in, the only way you could get out was in that method of travel. And so there were two of us had to come out all the way down here by, down the way to Calcutta, down to Singapore, to come up by boat to Shanghai. One young fellow went to London to meet his bride, but Raymond Joyce and I came down here, and from the city of Dihua, we left, I still recall, May 26th. May 26th is what we call Lama Muir Day in the China Inland Mission. It's the day of prayer. It was the day when Hudson Taylor took some 20, 30 original missionaries to China. Lama Muir Day, 26th of May. We traveled on horseback all over the mountains and then by railway down to Calcutta. It took me 6 months from Guchang or from Urumqi to get to Shanghai. 6 months. And people are still interested about it. They pump you and talk to you about it. And one of our missionaries' son or was a relative, he was working with the newspapers. And of course, you know, we had traveled. I arrived on a Sunday night and I think Monday morning they come around and interview you in big letters. Two young men travel 6 months to win a bride. And you know, the wonderful thing is, I arrived on a Sunday night. My father-in-law was already waiting there, the Presbyterian minister. My wife and I were married after having not seen each other for six years. We were married in Shanghai. And my mother, my dear mother, who still was working in the business at home, wondering, and you know, we used to communicate in German. She would write to me in German and I would type my letters to her in English. But she was waiting. You see, we were sort of lost in the middle of Central Asia. You couldn't communicate. Letters would take 4 or 5 months. My letter to my wife, dear, took six months to reach her. Then I asked the question. and it took another 6 weeks or so to have the answer. Now, we smile at this today, but you know what goes on in a young man's heart during days of that nature. But, you know, I'm telling all of these, it was the Lord's way of teaching and guiding and directing us in those days. Well, my mother was still in the business, and the telegram, those were the days when telegrams didn't always get through. And I sent a telegram to my mother, and she was in the bake shop that day. She was busy from morning till night, and a lady came in from Pittsburgh, and she said, "Have you seen the Pittsburgh paper today?" And she said, "No, it hadn't come yet. She hadn't read it." And here was just a little clipping in there. One young man mentioned my name in Butler, Pennsylvania, traveling 6 months, and he was married on Friday, and she found out, I think, late on Saturday. But so ends the story of a young man. You give your life to the Lord and allow him to guide and to train. He does it in his own way. He doesn't do it twice in the same way. And I look back in a grateful way to what God has done. And I wish I didn't even think I could speak that long. My mouth dries up on me. But you know, the Lord gave my wife and me we were 20 years in China. My mind doesn't work very fast. But then again, we came into this part of China. And the Japanese war was already in existence. But before Pearl Harbor, we could stay in occupied China with no problem. But then we were married shortly. I think we had our first boy right here in central China. One morning, about 5 o'clock, we heard a rumor that Japanese were coming. And in a short hour or two, we had to hire a barrow. My wife was expecting. And these Chinese barrows, if you've ever seen them, a huge wheel with a little tray on each side, you would rest on a cushion on the left side or however the carter wanted you to do it, and your baggage was on the other side. And my wife and I had to flee out of Huang Tran at a couple hours' notice to get out of the way of the Japanese. By then, it was Pearl Harbor had passed, and we had to get out of the way, or else if we had been captured, we would have been held prisoners. My father-in-law and mother-in-law were Japanese prisoners for a number of months. Then Pearl Harbor broke out, and they were on the wrong side of the line. And the Lord led us up the road, and we couldn't go back again. I had to go back and get our few earthly belongings. The Japanese had sort of destroyed and thrown away the little precious things that you keep when you're out in that part of the world. And then we came up to the city of Dojiako, where our daughter Anna was born. Maybe I should just mention that when the Lord gave us our first child, we were here in America. Probably better if you don't have any children at all, because my wife almost died of eclampsia. And I'm only mentioning this because through the years, the Lord graciously gave us 4 children born in China. And he always thought to it that somehow we were in an area where we could be taken care of. We could be in a hospital. And the Lord wonderfully undertook for us. But then, on the other hand, when we came home, with our 4 children, our boy Ben, the Lord took him. He had a cancer of the leg. Here we were in privileged America with all the medical help that we could get. And somehow or other, just teaching me once again, don't say the Lord can't take care of a situation, no matter whether you're in Central Asia or in the Mongolian desert. If he's put you there, put your trust in him, and he can. And he will take care of you. Now I realize that missions perhaps is so different today. I'm saying all this to the glory of the Lord and thanking him for his goodness. I don't want to say much more, but may I just come back again to my favorite verse. It says, whoever serves me must follow me, and where I am, my servant shall also be. My Father will honor the one. It says to me, I came home, we came home. The communists finally pushed us out. We could not get back in there anymore. We were, by that time, we had 4 children. We were in northwest China, in the province of Gansu here. I'm saying all this just to link you together. One of the books that the Lord used in my life that brought blessing and encouragement to me was the story of Borden of Yale. Some of you have read Borden of Yale. It's well known. But you know, before I finished my work in China, I was the superintendent of Borden of Years, the Borden Memorial Hospital. I knew the Borden family. I knew the mother. But the Lord, how he honors one when we willingly serve him, and he brought that into my life, and I thought I should let you know about it. But then I came out, and the Lord again wonderfully led Katie and me to come into the assembly. I've been brought up in the Lutheran church, and I am not very strongly denominational. My wife has a Presbyterian background. But when we came to the south side of Chicago, it was a dear man of God, and I enjoyed this morning the record that our speaker gave to the Plymouth Brethren, as we're so often called, how even humbly they're willing to stand out in the street corner, maybe not many people listening, you just never know. But a dear brother from our assembly in the south side, he had heard through Moody friends, by that time I was working at Moody, he had heard that some people, missionaries, had moved into your area. You go visit them. And Don Hall came and visited us, and it's through Don Hall's ministry, and I had known a little bit about the Brethren, we were led into the ministry of the chapel down there in Washington Heights in the south side of Chicago. And I'm only quickly telling this, that I've been, since we came home from China in 51, I've been working with Moody Bible Institute for 21 years. And when the time came, I was getting older, you see, but the Lord gave me wonderful privileges. And I must tell this anyhow. I had preached on missions, you know, that wasn't too hard for me. And one of the Lord's dear brothers came up to me and said, you know, it was after the service, he wanted me to sit down. I still remember. He said, you know, my wife and me, we want you. You're one of our elders. We would like you to go out and visit some of our missionaries. Maybe you could encourage them and help them and bring blessings to them. Well, that was a wonderful dream. Here I was ready to retire, and someone offered me another trip. You know, it's always a trip. But it was so wonderful. I went eagerly a Monday morning to my boss at Moody and said, could I possibly get an extra month, not paid vacation, so I could go on this trip? And this trip, the way it was described to us, we want you to visit so-and-so and so-and-so. My son, Jim, who's here today, was with his wife in Indonesia at the time. My father-in-law, Katie's father, was in Taiwan. We had Ted Carlson, our missionary, was in Japan. And we had missionary friends in France. And he said, well, you know, while you come around the world, come into France, you stop off at the Holy Land and visit the Holy Land. And here, one of the Lord's servants just put in our hand this wonderful gift. And, you know, I never dared to admit that God does honor his servants, but I felt honored to have this wonderful privilege to visit with our missionaries. And we came visit Ted Carlson at Tokyo. We came into Tokyo. We got a telegram that Katie's father had passed away. He was a 94 years old missionary in Taiwan. As a widower, he had gone back to serve the Lord in that country. And we were able to go to Taiwan, to Hong Kong, and then come over to Indonesia, where Jim and Penny were, and then visit some of our missionary friends that live here at Wheaton now, people that go to the Baptist church here. Their names slipped me. The Lennoxes. We visited them in Beirut, and in those days you could not fly from an Arab country right directly into Israel. You had to go to Cyprus first, and we had the wonderful privilege of going into Israel. Right there in the city of Bethlehem, my wife's niece was a missionary, was home on furlough, but they led us to the place where she was living in the city of Bethlehem. And there was a lady there whose name now slipped my mind at the moment, a woman that had known my parents-in-law. And through her help, we came in contact with an Arab Christian who took us all the way through Samaria, from Judah through Samaria into Galilee. And what a thrill it was to come up to the Lake of Galilee and see the place the Lord had sent here upon earth. And I was able to take my wife over to Germany, show her some of the places where I had been as a boy, and to England. It became a trip around the world. The Lord so wonderfully gave us at that time. And then just to add to that, a few years later, this same dear brother came to us and said, you know, you're not getting young anymore. We have some missionaries that are down here in Mexico and in South America. We would love you to visit them. Maybe you could bring a little encouragement to them also. And I still remember that admonition, sitting down with that dear brother around the kitchen table, talking about church problems in the little city of Mexico where he was serving the Lord. And it was a wonderful privilege to visit missionary friends down in Ecuador to see HCJB, to get down into Peru, some missionary friends, way down into southern Brazil, where there were other missionary friends. And how the Lord, just sort of his crowning goodness, gave us these wonderful privileges. I want to give testimony to that. I may never have the ability to get up here before you to speak, but I thought I couldn't even stand up as I do now, but I thank God that we are his servants. If any man serve me, let him follow me. And where my servant be, there shall also, where I am, there shall also my servant be. If any man serve me, him will my Father honor. So be willing to serve him. Your position may be completely different from mine. And just bring glory to him. Serve him in the place that he puts you, wherever he sends you, whatever he wants you to do. And with joy in serving the Lord. Even as the Father sends me, so send I you. That's what the Lord said to his disciples. And I'm grateful I was one of his sent ones. He kept me alive to tell the story. And I thank him for it. Legs don't hold out anymore.
One generation will commend your work to another. They will tell your mighty acts. They will speak of the glorious splendor of your majesty. And I will meditate on the wonderful work. Did you hear about the wonderful work that I'm saying? Isn't it a blessing to be able to sit, to go to listen, to hear the marvelous work that God does in your majesty? Now, I just wanted to open up a brief.
She's not doing as well as I wish she did. You know, she has Alzheimer's, which is interpreted in so many ways. Even the doctor, he calls it Alzheimer's 2. She had a little stroke this last week, and she wasn't really conscious of it. Maybe I shouldn't talk about so freely, but that is life. The Lord has allowed that in our life. I can't understand why, but I take what he has allowed. I thank him for the wife he gave me. His wonderful help. He bore us 5 children, and the Lord graciously has taken us through these years, even though we're still in a fallen world and we all share in some way in whatever God allows. But serve him gladly. You will never regret it. We traveled by boat. It took 3 weeks to travel from Vancouver via Japan. We were traveling in a Japanese airline to come to Shanghai. And here, as an ardent young missionary, I was very much deflated. The first thing that impresses you impressed me was the fragrance of all these harbors that were so polluted, you know, when you come into Asia. Something you don't expect, but it becomes part of life to you. You have to, if you want to live among the people, if you want to identify with themselves, I would always advise, learn their language. Learn to love the people. And I think you will always be rewarded. I've heard it from other missionaries. So many people want, you know, we want everything to instant. We want instant coffee. We want to rush there and get the job done and run back home. And missionary work just isn't quite like that. And serve the Lord with gladness no matter what the circumstances are. But that's the way it was in my day. Yes, the Chinese communists came into North China. You know, they took over Beijing very shortly after the World War. Many of the Russians gave their ammunition and whatever they had left to the Chinese communist armies. And they took over. As soon as they had ammunition, they came from Beijing. And Chiang Kai-shek, who had been the president before, he fled, it was fleeing, from West China, where the government had moved. They went over to Taiwan. And Taiwan now is what we would call the new China. But the communists went from Beijing further south and took Nanjing, which means the southern capital, and then they went step by step from province to province and took all of China. And they had no real opposition. And by 1951, we were at 49, it was roughly 18 months, they had taken over all of China with very little resistance. And when roughly the first 6 months, they were in full control. But when their own teachers and cadres, as we call them, took over, they did not want missionaries. Zhou and Lai and Mao Zedong, they more or less told us, we don't want you to come. They had to start the three self-movements. We want to do our own governing of our churches. We want to do our own support. And we want to do our own control. We don't need missionaries. And that's how we were actually pushed out. The China Inland Mission had hoped to be able to stay there, because some of our dear Chinese friends used to say, well, when trouble ever comes, you know, you foreign nationals, you can pack up and go home. We are always the ones who are left behind. And so we felt that we should struggle with them through this period of time while communism was coming in. But we couldn't do it. They did not want us, and they really pushed us out in 1951. So even though you have many people in China now teaching English, if you're a good teacher, they will want you. They're there by the thousands, but they don't want the missionaries. And yet the Lord wonderfully has touched the lives of people. I know a man that I met right here in your chapel last year. He's a fireman, fire engineer from Baltimore. He and his wife were ready to retire. They went out to China for 3 years in the city of Tianjin to study Chinese by the time they were fluent enough. And they could attend the communist churches, the kinds that they allowed to exist. And they were free to go around, and they say they would go to the church, worship with them, but in the afternoon or evening, they would get into the homes of the Christian people who daren't talk in public, and they were able to lead people to the Lord. So the Lord has wonderful ways for the one who's willing to pay the price and the one who has the courage to do things of that nature. Even yet, and even today, he has wonderful ways of working. I have friends that are way up there in Chinese Turkestan now. I'm waiting for them. I've gotten in contact with them. I want to meet them this summer. They want to know my experience. I want to know their experience. But they know they're there only at the mercy of the government. If the government doesn't give you a visa for next year, you just can't come back. And these friends that they were writing to me, they daren't write openly. Their letters all come via Hong Kong, uncensored, you see. But now I just, since last Friday, 100 days till Hong Kong becomes part of main China. What the changes will be, we don't know. But there is a land that's still a missionary country. We must pray for it. And I wish I could say some more things, but I haven't time. But this Dr. Fischbacher, he became a dear friend of mine because I knew his brother. His father was a businessman from Scotland, and it was a burden on his heart. He wanted 5 of his children to go to China. And those were the days when it wasn't so easy to get in. But I met his brother, this Dr. Fischbacher's younger brother, and he and his sister. Dr. Fischbacher's sister came to China before the doctor did. Then the doctor came. And then when his younger brother saw his older brother give his life to the Lord, he volunteered. 3 of the Fischbacher family came to China. And I knew Dr. Fischbacher very well. He told me about his other sister, his 4th sister, who wanted to go to Africa. She was studying medicine in Scotland. But I never knew about the 5th. And I only learned last year of that 5th daughter the father and mother prayed for. And all of them became missionaries. So God still answers prayer. So never give up. He has his ways with our life. Some of you boys and girls, maybe you got tired by now, but give your life to the Lord. There's a wonderful reward in serving the Lord. I better